Good morning and welcome to the Mr. Elvin Podcast. It's Monday, September 19th, the morning after Washington's 36-27 defeat in Detroit. Here to talk about that, it's the second half to my first half, Matt Turrell. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Jamie. Could we talk about, I don't know, something other than the first half of this game?
That was the worst imaginable half of football. It was obviously completely one-sided. I don't think Washington had a turnover, yet we're managed to lose 22 to nothing. Nothing was going right in all three phases of the game. My son was like in rage tears. I was right there with him. I try not to get, you know, invested, but after a week one win, they pulled me back in.
That's all it took was 1 week one win. That's pretty impressive when you think about it.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I kind of got myself thinking that, like, oh, we're going to go into Detroit and win and get up 2-0. And I don't know. I was all aboard the Dur wagon. I couldn't help myself.
Yeah, the Dur wagon seems to have skidded off to the shoulder. I don't know. I mean, I guess I still had my, they're going to wind up 1-1 somehow in my head. So I wasn't quite as disappointed, although, especially given the way the second half went, but man, midway through that first half, it was like, not only was it bad, I couldn't put my finger on which part was bad. I couldn't figure out what change to call for. I don't know. It was really dreadful.
Well, I mean, quick recap is I think there was at least five, maybe six or even seven offensive possessions in the first half, and they all ended with either a three and out or a safety. At one point, I know their first five possessions were four three and outs and a safety. And I don't know if maybe they got a first down before the end of the half, but it didn't feel like it.
One interesting thing for me is usually I have the feeling that I'm part of the jinx, you know, the classic, like whenever I turn the game on, they lose. But this time I was having trouble getting set down. I was getting some food together or driving to a friend's house. So I missed some chunks of the first half. So I got to feel like, hey, maybe when I'm watching, I'm not the jinx this year, but when I heard the recap of what had happened, I almost didn't believe it until I got to see the second quarter, and it was pretty much just as bad as described. Now, my friend that I was watching the game with was very much on this, like, can we see Taylor Heinicke now tip, and I was taken aback because it did not seem to me that Carson Wentz was the problem, but, you know.
Miles also suggested a move to Heinicke in the first half.
Where do you land on this? Are you on board?
Hell no. Why? No, of course not. I mean, look, I mean, not that Carson Wentz is Tom Brady or anything, but like nothing was going right in the first half. I think Detroit's version of Chase Young actually produced with three full sacks in the first half. And that was just, I think they might have had five as a team in the first half. I mean, it was just no blocking whatsoever. They couldn't run. They couldn't pass protect. I mean, nothing was going right offensively. And also, like, on special teams, Dax Milne? Is it Dax Milne or Milne? I can't remember.
I think it's Milne, but I also don't care because Milne. I hope they get rid of him so we don't have to think about it anymore.
Yeah, he returned three straight kick returns where he got tackled inside his own 20. I think two of them would have been touchbacks if he just literally did nothing. So anyway, it was just like at all three phases, disaster. But let me fast forward to the end real quick. I'm actually more excited about this team through two games than I thought I would be.
Okay.
Despite that first half and despite losing at Detroit and being favored to lose at Detroit, which hadn't happened in like a year and a half or 2 years. They scored four touchdowns in the second half. A week after scoring four touchdowns in the first game. Like what Washington team is capable of four touchdowns in a full game, let alone a half? And these weren't garbage time. I mean, yeah, Detroit was up, but and they didn't, you know, complete the comeback. But all of four of those touchdowns were scored with Detroit, you know, playing, defense on the level and trying to keep them from scoring. They weren't in, like, prevent mode. We actually have a quarterback who's on pace for 60 touchdowns. He might also be on pace for 25 interceptions. But 60 touchdowns, like, dude, the defense is awful, and we just lost at Detroit, but this might actually be, like, a somewhat interesting, exciting brand of football.
Yeah, the question that I found myself thinking about, though, back to that, you know, hey, is it time for Taylor Heinicke question, which I initially totally scoffed at, is Curtis Samuel appears to genuinely be one of those players on offense that affects what you can do on offense, you know, both between what he is capable of doing and what the defense has to do to account for that. And Jahan Dotson certainly seems to be at least quickly shaping up into something similar. So is the improvement because of the quarterback, or is it because of the improvement in the offensive weapons? Plus, of course, Logan Thomas coming back and everybody else remaining the same.
I think it's both the upgrade at quarterback and adding two weapons at wideout and Samuel and Dotson. I mean, it feels night and day from a passing standpoint, at least. I mean, the run game is still whatever weak. I mean, Gibson couldn't get going at all yesterday. But yeah, it seems like a clear upgrade. Now, like I said, Wentz is on pace for 25, 26 interceptions. Like, there is that. And he did go an entire half doing absolutely nothing yesterday. But like, those three receivers have a combined six touchdowns through two games.
The 60 to 25 is an interesting statistic, because I think that that's really good, obviously. But beyond good, it's Mina Kimes and whoever her guest was made a point about Wentz, where they were like, yeah, you know, the Colts got so scared of Wentz that they were, you know, not letting him do anything. So he had the high touchdown interception ratio, but also the unremarkable stats and the basically mediocre season coming off of last year. They were like, it's stupid, because Wentz's high variance plays, you need to give him the opportunity to make the high end ones, and you need to sort of accept the low end ones. And sort of the joke that I made after last week's game, you just hope that he has twice as many good plays as bad plays. And so far, that's literally what he's on pace to do. And it's a really good argument for just letting Wentz be Wentz. It's been fascinating to watch. I just wish that they had been able to do it for a full game this week.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, was it you last week that said the stat about like, no Washington quarterback has had a 30 touchdown season ever, or since, I don't know, Sonny Jurgensen or something?
It wasn't me, but it sounds like the sort of dreary thing that I would say, so I understand the mix.
Okay, somebody mentioned that. I haven't fact-checked it, but I can't recall a 30-touchdown Washington quarterback season myself. I mean, he's on pace for 60. This is just, it's just nutty. Now, as fun as that is, I mean, I think Detroit, which hung 36 on them, and like an honest 36, because I think Washington only had like one or two turnovers that only turned into like 3 points or something.
Plus the safety.
I could be wrong on that. But in any event, Detroit scored a legit four touchdowns and tacked a couple field goals onto that. I think Jared Goff like left some points out there on the field too. Like, he missed some throws that would have been big plays. They were running at will. I think they averaged 8 yards a carry, something like that. Amon-Ra St. Brown just wide open all day, 9 catches on 12 targets plus 68 yards rushing. It was a pitiful performance by the defense.
It is pitiful. It's partially the same thing I said last time, where if a running back can get past the first level, they're going to get six more yards before anybody has any chance of stopping them. So that's a problem. The cornerbacks seem to be struggling, but to me, it looks like it's got to be a schematic issue, and I'm not smart enough or, like, you know, tape grindery enough to be able to describe what that is, but it looks very similar to the same problems that they've had for several years. So to me, there's got to be something philosophically that's happening here in the coaching and in the defensive approach that is just not yielding results. I mean, I know that mid-season coordinator change is, you know, sort of the last refuge of the hot take talk show person. But I don't know. It just seems to me like, is there any chance that firing Jack Del Rio makes this defense substantively worse? Is there any way that's even possible?
It seems unlikely that it could get worse. It also seems unlikely that, like, that would be the silver bullet. The players don't seem very good, as well as the coaching or whatever is going on schematically, which I'm not smart enough to analyze. But I'll give you an example. William Jackson III was their big free agent ticket last year, and I don't know, it was suggested that he was a top cornerback. I don't think we've ever seen anything resembling that through his first 19 games in Washington. The first touchdown to St. Brown was so pathetic. I mean, Goff was just like throwing it up, like not even really like a 50-50 ball. Like it should have either been deflected or intercepted. And Jackson just fell down. Just fell down on the play. And it was at a point in the game where they really needed something positive to happen. I don't know. It was one of those like just moments that will stick in my craw is like, that guy sucks forever.
Yeah. So the hope for reinforcements on defense is Chase Young, of course, theoretically someday will be able to play football again. Sure. Which to me does not even remotely shore up any of the areas of apparent need. And you can argue all you want that getting better pressure on the quarterback will help out the defensive backs, but I don't feel like the defensive backs just need a little bit more time and or a little bit less time, I suppose, mm-hmm. and whatever. It just feels like an abject disaster out there. I don't, mm-hmm. I think their best hope for this year is really to try to win every game 41-38 or something, or at least whether that's what they try to do, that needs to be our expectations as watchers and consumers of this product. Is I think hoping for the defense to do anything is idiotic. And I think if we find ourselves in the advance of a week being like, well, if they can just hold so-and-so under 100 yards, like it's not going to happen. That's never going to happen.
They play Philly this week, the best rushing attack in the league. And they're giving up 8 yards a carry against Jacksonville and Detroit.
Jalen Hurts is going to, I don't know what it's going to be statistically, but he is going to score 700 fantasy points combined rushing and passing next week. It's going to be so embarrassing to watch.
Number one fantasy QB in the rankings this week.
Absolutely. Now that's not, but for the first time in like decades, Washington could still win. They're just going to have to really like Carson Wentz is going to have to come out angry.
Well, this is why I'm excited is more than I expected to be through 2 weeks. We knew the defense sucked. The defense sucked last year. They, you know, whatever metric they were like, whatever metric you look at, they were like 25th in the league, and they added nobody. I mean, can you name one defender of consequence that they added to this roster in the offseason?
No, I can't.
And they have the same shitty coordinator who, you know, is calling the January 6th insurrection a dust up, and the defense is a dust up. And like this is, we knew this. Like maybe we could have hoped that somehow they'd figure it out. The same players and the same coach would figure it out this year, like against logic, but they haven't. They're actually worse through 2 weeks through the same, look at the same metrics. They're like 28th, 29th in the league. And again, that's against Detroit and Jacksonville. You know, this is our weight class that we're playing against. So anyway, the defense is what you might expect it would be. I just didn't see coming in and being capable of scoring 4 touchdowns a game.
I forgot you were allowed to do that
at all. I mean, that's like a different sport than what Washington usually plays.
Agreed.
And what did we add offensively in the offseason? Added Carson Wentz. Pretty questionable how big of an upgrade that was. Drafted Jahan Dotson. Got Curtis Samuel back from injury. That was pretty much what they did on offense, you know, year over year. And those seem like slight improvements, you know. But through 2 weeks, it just seems like night and day.
Well, low-key third element to this that I actually hadn't thought about and haven't heard discussed is they also lost Brandon Scherff, allegedly mm-hmm. one of their top, you know, their only all-pro, their only whatever, their only repeat Pro Bowler, high draft pick. It certainly does make that draft pick look even worse in hindsight.
yeah, because that was kind of controversial. Like, wasn't it like he was a guard drafted sixth overall or something?
Yeah, and Jay Gruden came out and was openly critical of it.
So what did he say? He's like, well, you gave me a guard with our first round pick.
Yeah, something like that. And he's a guard in that sort of Gruden-y way. Guard. One interesting thing, as you were recounting and reminding me yet again that the defensive coordinator called the January 6th thing a dust-up, is leaving aside all the politics of it, literally, leaving it aside, the January 6th incident was like, chaotic. People died. There was like lots of running and breaking things and throwing things and stealing of things. And you would at least think that the sort of person who minimizes that by calling it a dust up would then like bring out like a really aggressive defense and be like, this is such an aggressive guy that even that doesn't seem doesn't yeah. seem crazy, but like, no, he appears to be the sort of person who's like, what I want to do is, what if we just gave them the middle of the field, just like let them take that and see what happens. Like, it's triply annoying that he makes dumb comments like that and then lacks the fundamental aggression that it would appear to imply. Really frustrating. I'm real annoyed with that guy. Well,
the play that really, you know, showcased that was the DeAndre Swift touchdown, where he caught the screen pass kind of out in the flat and fell down, like just full on fell down and got back up. Like, not, he didn't like bounce right up. Like, it took him a second, you know, and there was nobody in the screen. No Washington defender was, first of all, just like in the play to begin with, but then no one pursued it quickly enough to get anywhere close to making a tackle on a player who, again, had just fallen down. You know, this wasn't like 50 yards downfield. This is like at the line of scrimmage.
To be fair, his last name literally means fast.
Right. Well, we should draft somebody with a similar moniker. Yes. But yeah, I mean, it was just like such an embarrassing play at a point in the game, again, where like they really needed to stop. And they just couldn't. It just seemed like they were completely incapable of slowing down this Jared Goff-led offense that I don't think features like a single Pro Bowler. You know what I mean? Like there's no like.
I'm on Ross St. Brown's going to the Pro Bowl. I mean, he's had
he will. I mean, the second half of last year, he was awesome.
He was awesome.
Everybody expects him to have a good year this. But you know what I'm saying? Like, that the Detroit Lions are not an offensive juggernaut. They're not even like a. I would not expect them to be in the top half of the league offensively. And Washington looked like they had no chance.
Yesterday. I think they might wind up in the top half of the league offensively. And this isn't just the like, well, you never know, first week of the year. Maybe this team is like, you know, I think that they are, if Goff can stay mediocre to decent Goff and not revert into the worst possible Goff, I think that they can. I mean, I think they're actually pretty comparable to where we want Washington to be right now. Slightly inverted. Their defense is obviously looks significantly better. Their offense is probably not quite as explosive. But I think that they are a team that is potentially a team on the rise. I think there's a few teams like this where if a couple players break right, if maybe they make one more move in the offseason, then like next year, these teams could be legitimately in the conversation. I think they're one of those. I genuinely do. Did you see the Jacksonville Indianapolis score?
So that was encouraging. Because Jacksonville won like 24-0 or something?
Something like that. I didn't see the final, but yeah, they shut them out is basically, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah.
And it was especially rewarding. Like, not that I feel such kinship with Carson Wentz, not that he's like my special, you know, whatever it's called, like regional hero, but Indianapolis was really mean to him. And I don't like it when people are mean to other people. Like, that's sad. And it's
also weird to him. They mean to him in like a weird way.
Yeah, oh,
like
super
the,
weird.
Like way. The owner in the locker room after the game being like, that guy will never play for us again. Like, very Snyder-ian. Snyder-ian? Snyder-esque?
I would say worse than anything Snyder has done, like, in the player personnel realm that I've seen. I don't remember. Snyder usually at least keeps that kind of thing keeps it quiet to the coaches, and it doesn't come out until, you know, 18 months later, and or he's, you know, allegedly committing other violations. But but that was really bad. But also just the underlying theory that they had. They're like, well, we're really good. And if we could just replace that jackass Carson Wentz with somebody great like Matt Ryan, we'd be in good shape. And then you look at the results against common opponents in the last 2 weeks. And it's just nice. It made me genuinely happy. It really did. And it also gives hope, because also the fact that Jacksonville was able to score that much, like maybe the Washington defense is, definitely not good.
We can't say that. Not after yesterday. I'm sorry.
Right.
Another thing that just stuck in my craw was the coaching decisions on point after / 2-point conversions. It made no sense. Like, they went for two. Let's see. I think they, yes. Okay. So they scored in the third, early in the third. 3 minutes left in the third. They score to get down 9 and they go for two. Down 9 in the third. I don't really understand. Like, I'm sure there's a sheet that they're looking at that tells them, based on analytics, when you're down 9 in the third, it might make more sense all things considered, other than the actual game in progress, to go for two. But I don't get it. I don't get why you would ever deviate from the norm. Like, if your norm is extra points, why you would ever go for two at any point before the fourth quarter, or even later in the fourth quarter when the scoring is done, or like, you know that you're going to need those 2 points.
So,
it just drives me nuts. I don't get it. I don't, because that was at that point in the game, it was 22-13. 35 total points had been scored. This game ended up going over 60. Like, you have no idea if you're going to need one or two when it comes to the end. So why not go with whatever it is you go with? Like, your normal approach on 2 points. Or, I mean, on point afters.
So Kevin Cole from Pro Football Focus posted a flow chart to explain why this was mathematically a rational decision. And I don't understand the flow chart. The point of that is that there is a mathematical argument to be made that I think it's basically, as best as I can figure out, it's like, if you basically think you're going to hit on half of your 2-point conversions, if that is roughly your 2-point conversion rate,
sure.
Then when you miss, if you miss this one, then you are likely to make the next one to make up for it. I don't know. I got nothing. But to me, that's the least of my problems. And actually, there's the contrarian part of me is like, well, at least it's an interesting decision. You know, it's not so.
Well, I just don't get it.
I don't get it. I'm not capable of defending it. But I like when coaches do something that goes against what I would have expected, as long as it's not, you know, Nathaniel Hackett level stupid. That is the guy's name, right? The Broncos coach.
Yeah, well, like, I get when you're like, you score a touchdown to go down 9 with like 2 minutes left, which is what happened yesterday. Score a touchdown to get down 9. You kick the extra point so that like you're still within a touchdown. You're still within 8 at the end. That makes all the sense in the world. Of course, we missed that extra point.
Correct.
Fucking worthless. But yeah, it just drives me batty. I don't understand why you would deviate from the norm. I'm repeating myself, but like, if you're going to go for two in the third quarter down, you know, a score or two, you should go for two all of the fucking time. Otherwise, you're kind of jerking your players around and fucking with the momentum that you just achieved by scoring a touchdown to begin with.
Like, yes.
You know what I mean? Like, the players are like, are we going 1-2? We just scored. This is awesome. We're all celebrating. Now we got to like think about this next thing, and if we fail on the 2-pointer, it's like, oh, and the touchdown, it wasn't worth 7. Oh well.
Well, actually, you may have just helped clarify for me in my head why it didn't bother me so much, was because I didn't feel that sense of indecisiveness. It seemed like they knew what was up. Like, yeah, they were lined up for two before the announcing team had a chance to give us like, oh, this is an interesting decision. Like, they were out and lined up for two. They knew that was going to happen. So I can't join you in that concern, because I'm not sure that concern is accurate. And I think that decisiveness to me is part of why it seemed okay. They knew what they were going to do. Do I understand it? I do not. Do I entirely agree with it? I don't. But it was very clearly like, it wasn't like, again, Nathaniel Hackett, who like was going to go for it, and then he's going to kick, and then they get a delay of game, and then everything goes off the rails. Like it or not, they were like, this is what we're doing. And I totally understand not liking it, but I at least am intrigued by the idea that they are making interesting decisions. It also means, I should add, that they are not living in fear of someone, quote unquote, in the front office or ownership, you know, blowing back on them somehow. They are making
bold
the decisions,
choices.
The bold choices that they want to make, for better or for worse. And in this case, it was for worse. In this case, it indisputably contributed to losing the game, but it didn't bother me. There were other things in this game that bothered me. That wasn't one of them.
Well, this is just one of those things that bothers me in general. I'm not too worried about yesterday's choices, and it did not end up mattering in the end. But it's just one of those things. Like, just go for two or don't. Like, as a general strategy, don't go back and forth based on a chart in the third quarter when you have no idea what else is going to happen the rest of the game. It's kind of like, you know, on punt coverage, when the ball is bouncing, the punt is like rolling down the field, and you've got the coverage team like surrounding the ball, and one of them touches it before it stops rolling. That makes my blood boil. Sorry, it's just another one of those things.
I think of you as such like a friendly, mellow type guy that the idea of you just seething with anger over a guy stopping a ball from rolling an extra 2.5 yards is that makes me very happy. I really enjoy that mental image. I get it. I see where you're coming from. And I will agree with you 100% that I'd be thrilled if they came out. We're like, well, what we were doing there was we were exploring something, and you guys are going to see us go for two a lot more. And if they literally went for two anytime other than, you know, the time is about to expire and the extra point is what wins the game, then you might as well kick it. But I would love for them to go to two every time. I think that would be fascinating. The Steelers used to do that for a while, it felt like. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it didn't seem great, but it also didn't seem to like actively hurt them any. And it certainly confused both defenses and commentators. And anything that does that is good in my book.
It seems like something like if you have a team that offensively is just a total boss, then you go for two all the time. It's just like a power move. You know, like, couldn't you see like the Chiefs, just that's their policy? Unless they clearly need that one point, they're just going to go for two all the time. Because as an opponent, I'd be like, well, shit.
Yeah, it's demoralizing as hell. I mean, it's the exact opposite of what you said it does to the offense. If you get it, especially if you get it for no reason, you know, you're up 16 and you're doing it to then go up 24. Like, that's just obnoxious. And it really could be demoralizing. I wonder if, and I have no reason to believe this guy is that good, but they seem to. I wonder if when good old bulletproof Brian Robinson comes back, if they'll be more inclined to do stuff like that because they feel like he's a superior, like short yardage thumper kind of guy.
Yeah. Yeah. And Gibson was not showing the thump yesterday in some of those situations. I don't know anything else to say about this team. Do you?
I've one thing about Gibson is that I feel bad, but I'm at the point now where whenever he touches the ball, all I can think is like, please God, don't fumble it. Like he's very quickly established himself in that territory. And that's sad because he's a pretty exciting player to watch. And I would like him to have a sort of Tiki Barber-esque solve the fumbling problem, become an exciting player again.
I don't want to jinx it, but he does have 37 touches in 2 weeks with no fumbles.
Welp, just jinxed that. And,
sorry.
That's okay. And then my other one Commanders related question for you is, if you had the choice, if Ron Rivera called you up this morning and said to you, Jamie, should I not?
For Dax Milne. Yes, I will.
Yes, exactly. The three guys that I would be perfectly fine if they announced replacing this morning are Dax Milne, Joey Sly, and then the one I was going to ask you about. If he was like, what do you think? Should I go ahead and fire Del Rio? And you get to make the call. What do you say?
Yes.
Today.
100%. Yes.
Interesting.
Yes.
I think I agree with you. That seems like a bad sign.
And I have no idea like how much of the blame falls on the coaching. But yeah, I mean, hasn't he been like notably obviously bad for a while now?
I certainly think so. And I mean, it makes sense that you don't know what plan B is, because I'm quite sure Jack Del Rio does not support plan B. Or any other form of contraception or birth control.
except for when it comes down. But one other thing. Two plays from the first half that were like also total head scratchers that just came back to me. One is at the end of the half, they had like a tailor-made Hail Mary situation. Like Washington had the ball on like their own 45. They're down 22-0 and there's like 4 seconds left in the half. So they drop back, and I actually said to Miles, I was like, oh, this would be interesting. We'll get to see how far Carson Wentz can throw the ball, you know, because he's probably going to throw it from, like, his own 40. So is he going to be able to get it into the end zone? What's this going to look like? This would be fun. Instead, he tries, like, a very quick little screen pass, like, right into the heart of the offensive line that was very similar to last week's interception to Trayvon Walker. Like everybody seemed like on a different page. It wasn't even close to being completed. It was probably closer to being intercepted than completed. And it was completely illogical. And that's how the first half ended. I still am wondering, like, as anybody asked, it was such an insignificant play in the grand scheme of the game, but like it was a perfect way to end a nightmare first half. So there was that play.
I think that was how I viewed it, was just that last thing. I was like, well, yeah, that's the appropriate ending for that half. Let's move on. So that was my reaction.
Earlier, the Lions tried a trick play where they like kind of threw a quick swing pass to the running back in the right flat, who threw it back to Goff, who then chucked it deep down the left sideline. And I think it was like a last minute pass breakup by Kendall Fuller in the end zone. I think that's how that ended. Washington got the ball like a possession or two later and tried the exact same trick play. Like exactly the same. It was uncanny that Detroit ran it and then Washington ran the same trick play, except Washington, whereas Detroit, like Goff put it like right on the receiver who was covered and it ended up being incomplete. Wentz chucked the ball towards the middle of the field and his receiver was on the left side, like 10, 20 yards away. And the receiver seemed to either make no attempt on the ball whatsoever or was completely thinking that like the ball would never come to him. It was so bizarre. I had to recount all this with you because it was like just that they would attempt the play at all right after Detroit did was strange. And then that they would be so off was, again, absolutely fitting for what that first half was.
One small positive that I took, because I totally did not even clock that play and have no further, I have nothing to add to your recounting of it.
The first half was nuts. I don't want to relive that.
But I will say that one thing that I found quietly really positive was that after the game, Logan Thomas took some responsibility for the interception that bounced off his hands. And that part is not significant, but what is significant.
Why? What? That was an uncatchable ball.
Agreed. But it was nice of Logan Thomas. Logan Thomas did the polite thing. That's not the good part. The good part is that when Carson Wentz was told that Logan Thomas had done that, he was like, what are you talking about? Like, that was 100% my fault. It's very nice of Logan to do that. It was nice because one of those knocks that kept coming out about Carson Wentz was like, oh, he's a bad leader. He's shitty in the locker room. People don't like him. And that certainly seemed on both sides of it. Like his teammate did what he needed to do to protect him, at least said the polite things in public. And he did the correct thing in public and took the full blame for himself. So like, hopefully at least two games in, he has not lost the locker room yet. That would be nice.
Yeah, that's a heartwarming tale. That was a bad ball. Thomas was open. Wentz threw it. Probably, I mean, I'd say that was like a good foot too high for Thomas to make any sort of real play on the ball. Like it wasn't going to, you know, there was no catchable. There's no possibility where he was catching that ball. Do you have anything else before we move on to Philly?
Just one minor non-Detroit game thing, but looking around the league, how do you feel about now Mike McDaniel perhaps joining the long and storied list of former Washington assistants who is going to totally take over the league as a head coach?
What a win for Miami. I like the Mike McDaniel experience just because he seems like a peculiar character.
What I think about him every time is he seems like somebody literally you would have hired to run a Yahoo blog in 2009. That's what he seems like to me.
But adding to the effect is like I have no recollection of him being a coach in Washington whatsoever. Like I only learned that he coached in Washington as a like byproduct of him finding success like 10 years later.
Well, I mean, he was really low level. He was like a wide receivers coach or something, if that.
All those other guys, though, like I'd at least like had heard their name or was like aware of them when they were a coach here. You know, all those other guys that are head coaches now.
But I mean, you're now going to be able to the picture, the graphic of Shanahan and McVay and LaFleur. You're now going to be able to add McDaniel to it. It's going to be insane looking back on it.
I think it's a fun part, like woven into the fabric of our embarrassment as a franchise. You know, it's just a fun aspect. Yeah.
So no, I got nothing else. I got nothing else on your Washington Commanders to add.
Two quick things. One is I'm seeing My Morning Jacket and The War on Drugs here in Wilmington, North Carolina over the next 9 days. It's incredible. I've lived here almost 14 years. These are the top two most anticipated concerts of that 14-year span, and they're happening in a nine-day run.
So
it's peak dad rock, peak excitement.
And it coincides with the Jewish High Holy Days. So you've got a similar religious experience going on. You can really relate to your Jewish brethren out here. We appreciate that.
Yeah, of course.
Are you all caught up on Hot D?
I did not get the Hot D last night. We had like a neighborhood function and we're watching Sunday Night Football. So I got to catch up on the D.
Wow. Neighborhood function?
Yeah, we had like a pool party, pig picking. There was a band. It was a whole thing. Yeah, it kind of went into the night, deep into the night.
Wow, like the neighborhood that rages on a Sunday night. That's pretty bohemian out there, man.
Well, it was kind of one of those things where like we raged into the dying of the light and then put all our kids to bed. And then like several of the dads reconvened for like a Sunday Night Football cigar. It was one of those nights.
Gotcha. Wow, that sounds that actually sounds delightful, and I'm glad you got to enjoy that.
Good time.
But that said, it really screws up our Hot D conversation today.
Yeah. Something from yesterday that just bothers me. This is like, you know, downing the punt before it stops rolling of me. Did you know that the WNBA finals ended yesterday?
I did. Speaking of people I believe you hired to run a blog at some point or another, I still follow Maggie Hendricks on Twitter.
Yeah, and love Maggie.
And she's great. She's terrific. Good follow on Twitter. Seems like a great person just based on my very limited online parasocial interactions with her. But she was covering it in pretty great detail.
It bothers me so much that they schedule WNBA finals games on NFL Sundays. Because it's so easily obscured, like just completely, like I, as someone who is a partner of the WNBA players for like 4 years and has grown into a fan and like actually cares about the series and the teams and like the storylines, like I didn't even realize the game had started until it was over. It's going up against the 1 o'clock games.
Yeah, it's a good point. I was going to say something like, well, you know, I hate to say it, but like there's almost anything you schedule the WNBA against it runs the risk of being overshadowed. But you're right. Like an NFL Sunday dominates the sports.
At least put it on Sunday night when there's just one game. Put it on Wednesday.
It's not even about the game. I've never thought about it in these terms, but the amount of coverage that even the worst NFL Sunday ever generates, and there's never a worst NFL Sunday because there's always a Miami scoring, you know, whatever, putting up 600 yards or something happened. You're right. I've never thought of how much news space, oxygen, the coverage of even the most basic NFL Sunday sucks up. You are correct. It's really, really stupid to schedule it for them.
It's just very frustrating because it's like a growing league and, you know, you're trying to, you know, get more people to watch women's sports. And this is a, you know, tentpole women's sports event, the WNBA finals. It started last Sunday. Game one was Sunday afternoon. And then it ends again on Sunday afternoon. It just is like frustrating. Like, because there's plenty of weeks, like right now on those like Tuesday, Wednesday nights when there's no football, it's kind of like collectively as sports fans, we're like, oh, let's see what's on ESPN. Oh, there was like a B-boy competition the other day in primetime on ESPN2. That's how little was happening in the world of sports. Just put the WNBA on primetime when there's not football happening, please. It's the finals. This isn't the regular season. It's the finals.
I think this is a much more worthy target of your rage than the downing the football a yard or two early. I agree with you. Although one interesting counterpoint, or not counterpoint, but sort of a, I don't know, complementary point to this is that also the Friday news dump is pointless now because of the 24-hour, 7-day-week news cycle. But if you really wanted to dump something, if you wanted a sports story anyway, firing a coach or, you know, whatever, releasing reports of your star quarterback having, you know, inappropriate sexual relations with massage therapists or like whatever, Sunday is actually the day to do that. NFL, if you release that news midday, like Trey Lance breaking his ankle, I feel like just barely bubbled above the surface, just barely.
Like there's so much going on NFL Sunday, and I did have a pig picking. I mean, you know, so, you know, that could be on me. So, like, I didn't even realize that Dallas beat Cincinnati with their backup quarterback until, like, late last night. I was like, whoa, what? This happened? I had no idea.
So I do want to go back to that topic for a second. Pig picking is not actually something, I'm sorry, pig picking, I'm seeing as I Google it. Is that a North Carolina thing, correct, apparently?
This is the first picking that I had participated in since I moved here, but it does seem to be one of these things that North Carolinians are familiar with. Yes.
So my interest in food really first accelerated past just kind of like, I like eating neat things to like fascination with food and foodways in American culture during college when I took a course entitled Food and Foodways in American Culture.
Good title.
Yeah, it was really descriptive. It nailed exactly what the class was about. But this sort of regional thing is exactly the kind of thing that fascinates me. I am not going to subject our podcast listeners to it, but just know that the next time you and I see each other, I'm going to have a whole host of questions about your traditional North Carolina pig picking.
Well, it basically tasted like pulled pork, you know, just for the listener, listener's edification. Like, the end result is basically a plate of pulled pork. But the presentation is spectacular. I mean, it's a full pig that has been smoked all day and perhaps all night before the day. And you're literally picking the meat off the pig. The point of contention at this particular picking was some of the aforementioned good old boy North Carolinians were mildly upset that the head had been removed. The expectation was that the head would still be on the pig. In this case, I don't know. It was a headless pig. Not sure why. So perhaps, you know, if for our listeners who are familiar with picking, if they were there, they might have been disappointed as well.
Now, do you know, did they want the head present just for sort of aesthetic reasons, or are, like, for example, the jowls and cheeks a specifically desirable portion of the pig? Or, like, what was the goal of having the head there?
I think it was more just for the visual splendor.
Okay.
But I do know that, you can eat the eyes, Clark. You can eat the tongue. I'm not sure about the other, like, cheek situation. Really talking to the wrong guy.
But you've been to 2,000% more pig pickings than I have, so you're the right guy as far as I'm concerned.
Honestly, I think I'd rather just have some, like, just like a tray of pulled pork that had been smoked and, you know, prepared versus like the whole animal splayed out. Like, it's a lot.
But it's also the difference between, like, yes, in an ideal world, I would much rather have somebody lightly warm a pound of jumbo lump crab meat in butter and give it to me. But that's not the point of having a, you know, day picking crabs out on the back deck. It sounds like that same sort of analogy. It's about the entire ritual and the experience of it, and a reason to stand around and complain about things like there being no head on the pig, or them all being female crabs, or whatever your specific issue is.
Well, this is an interesting dynamic that, like, crab picking, like, you're actually picking crabs most of the time. Like, it's a process.
Yes.
Pig picking, the pig has been smoked and is sitting off to the side, and you walk over to it, and for like maybe 1 minute, you pick the meat and put it on your plate. So you're not really, you know, it's not a process.
It's
just like grabbing it off a buffet. You know?
So it really is entirely an aesthetic, sort of like a Insta ready experience. Hashtag pig picking.
Yeah, but you do have to encounter and kind of interact with a large dead animal, you know, so that's not for everybody.
No, it's not. I get excited if I'm just at Costco and they have a giant halal goat in the freezer. I'm like, cool. Like, that's the best thing that's happened to me all day.
Is that a normal thing at Costco, or is that like a special occasion?
As near as I can tell, the one of the Costcos near me must have a specifically large halal desiring population, because yes, they always have two or three hanging in the freezer.
check that out.
Yeah, go for it, man. If you don't see it, let me know. I'll send you a picture the next time I do. It's very exciting.
Yeah. All right. You have anything else?
No, I really think that this went someplace unexpected. This is pretty interesting. Thanks, Jamie.
I can't believe you haven't brought up the Andor series yet. I think that debuts this week.
It does. Everybody seems very excited about it, especially your guys out on Daddington Island seem totally fired up about it. I'm reserving judgment. The Star Wars series have been so underwhelming for so many months now that I'm like, I'll believe it after I've seen those first three episodes that they're dropping.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, maybe we'll revisit that next week.
Are you fired up for it? Are you watching it?
I mean, it looks better for me, like just where I'm at as a Star Wars guy. It looks better than Obi-Wan, which I didn't really enjoy, but the Star Wars people in my life seem to think was super awesome.
No, the Star Wars people in your life really need to like reassess a number of things. I'm with you. If by where you're at as a Star Wars fan is like desirous of good stories and well-presented stories, then like I think I have wound up somehow in the same boat. Obi-Wan was a disaster in the end.
From best I can tell, they thought it was cool because like they got to see Darth Vader being a badass.
Yeah.
I'm quoting them directly. It's a direct quote.
You know, it's not inaccurate. It's just that similar to Washington's offensive performance, there was so much surrounding it that ultimately I think you have to tally it as a loss. It's just that Obi-Wan didn't have a scoreboard, whereas the Washington game did. But it was a very similar situation. Like, were there cool things to see? There were. Did it ultimately disappoint? It did.
All right, buddy. I'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you next week.
See ya.
Bye.